of the Louisiana House of Representatives from District 70 here in Baton Rouge. He's getting ready for the legislative session starting in 6 days, an ambitious agenda for Governor Bobby Jindal. The tax swap and much more coming from Franklin Foyle. We'll get his take. This from a man who's a member of the House Appropriations Committee. Also, yesterday was opening day in baseball, and we're slated to hear from the last man to win 30 games in a major league season, Dennis Dale McClain. In 1968, he was 31-6 for the Detroit Tigers. He has some thoughts about how the game has evolved over the last 45 years. Denny McClain, one of a kind. And we'll start with Franklin Foyle, but first the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It is 877-217-5757. We're 6 days away from the start of the legislative session. Governor Jindal has taken to the road in Louisiana. He's in Shreveport today pushing for his income tax swap for a sales tax increase that presumably would increase the state sales tax to 6.25%. But the governor is out there making his case, and others are surveying the governor's landscape and taking his words with interest. And one of those is Franklin Foyle, Republican member of the Louisiana House of Representatives from right here in Baton Rouge. Good morning, Franklin Foyle.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you for having me this morning.
Well, good to talk with you as always, and it's going to be a busy session, particularly for you. You're on appropriations. That's where much of the action will be.
It will be. In fact, we've already started working. We started 3 weeks ago, the Appropriations Committee, taking up the state budget, and have been going through all the departments, hearing their budget, and getting testimony. So we've been very busy, and we have another week of testimony to finish that up before we start the regular session.
What's your early read?
As far as the budget, it's going to be tough, as always. It's been very tough the last, really, 5 years. I've been in office 6 years. And we're going to have another battle, I believe, on how we handle making taking care of the cuts to higher education and health care. And we're going to have the one-time money issues, which are always very challenging. And so we're going to have to make some cuts in the appropriate places. But we're also going to be addressing the governor's tax plan, which will be very interesting.
Well, that's the item that's generating most of the attention right now. And the governor has not shied away from an ambitious agenda in year six of his administration. There are many people who have been supportive of the governor who are alarmed, and I don't think that word is an overstatement. Dan Juno of LABI being one in particular, but do you think it's too early to tell? Are you solidly in the governor's camp on this? Where are you right now?
I'm not sure where I'm going to be at the end of the day on this. First of all, I think it's good that we're having the discussion. It's always hard to change the status quo, and we've clearly had some serious budget issues the last few years. But probably the first hurdle I have to overcome to be comfortable is to make sure that if we do this swap, are we going to have enough money relying pretty much solely on sales tax as our source of state revenue to bring in the kind of revenue we need to support higher education and health care in the other areas. We really don't have a state property tax, and if we were to do away with state income tax, we would be looking at sales tax, and then after that, severance tax on oil and gambling money really is our chief methods of revenue. So I have to be comfortable that that's going to work for us before I get further into the details.
Mm-hmm. Today, in The Advocate, the lead story, the headline reads, "Neutral tax plan uncertain. House leader awaits fiscal office analysis." State Representative Joel Robideau, who is sponsoring the tax swap legislative package, stopped short of declaring that the bills meet the governor's goal of generating enough revenue to support the state budget if income taxes are abolished. Does it have to be revenue neutral?
In my mind, I don't think it has to be revenue neutral because it's not going to be revenue neutral for all of the taxpayers. Some people will pay more and some people will pay less. And also, as far as the plan is concerned, there's several different bills. It's not just one bill. And so there may be parts of it that may make more sense than others and might pass. I'm just not sure, yet until we hear more of the testimony. I've seen some of the details, mm-hmm. but I also need help from economists and other experts to hear the impact of these details.
297-5633, the governor is proposing an increase in the cigarette tax by a dollar and a nickel. Is that something that's palatable to you?
I think some cigarette tax makes sense. I voted to continue the cigarette tax at 36 cents and keep that in place, which was the lowest cigarette tax in the nation. I think we can move that upward. That's one of the areas where I hear from constituents where they don't mind paying more taxes. So I think we need to look at that. We certainly don't need to have the cheapest cigarette taxes in the nation.
Especially don't mind if they don't smoke. It's that old axiom, don't tax me, tax the guy behind the tree. 297-5633 or 877-217-5757 for Franklin Foyle. He is a lawyer and is a captain in, isn't that right?
That's right, in the U.S. Navy.
In the U.S. Navy. So Captain Foyle is with us to answer all questions. Jeff on I-12. Good morning, Jeff. You're on with Representative Foyle.
Good morning, Franklin. This is Jeff. I know that you have proposed several times relooking at the Constitution so that we have tough times, that health care and higher education won't be the only things to bear the brunt of fiscal austerity. Is that movement going anywhere?
Did you hear it?
I did not.
Okay. All right.
Hello?
Jeff wanted to know about health care and higher education always being the brunt of cuts. Constitutionally, it gives the governor and the legislature very little wiggle room.
It does, and I appreciate that question. For the last 4 years, I've tried to at least establish a commission to study whether or not we need to have a new constitution. Unfortunately, when we have tight budget times, 90% of our discretionary budget is health care and higher ed, and the rest of it is non-discretionary, so we have very little control over the rest of the budget. I believe we need to have more flexibility, and I think everything should be on the table as far as prioritizing where we spend our money. And so I've been trying to push at least to have a study, to have a new constitution, or at least determine whether or not it makes sense to have a new convention.
297-5633 for Representative Franklin Johnson Foyle, who is also Captain Foyle, who has seen a few things in his time in the legislature. He took office the same day that Governor Bobby Jindal took the oath, January 14th, 2008. When the governor came in, my guess is that you were a supporter of his when he ran for office. Has his performance lived up to your expectations?
Well, there are a lot of things I like that the governor has done. When I ran at the same time as he ran, I was excited to have sort of a new generation of leaders in office, and I think we've gotten a lot of good things accomplished. We don't always agree on issues, and I let him know that if I don't, but I try to work with him, and I'm excited for the progress we've made. I'll tell you, though, there's a lot more progress still to be made. It's very hard, as I've learned, to change the status quo. I thought when I got elected 5 years ago, we would have been able to make a lot more changes a lot quicker, and it just takes time.
Now, you represent an area that has many people affiliated with LSU, your alma mater.
I do.
Many people at LSU are not happy about the budget cuts and the way things have gone over the last 6 years regarding higher education in general. What do you say to them when they ask you questions?
I agree with them, and I've been very frustrated with the cuts to higher ed. In fact, I've voted for several of the last budgets where we used either rainy day fund or one-time money, which I really don't like that kind of budgeting practice. But the alternative was you would cut higher ed even further. So I've been, I've supported those budgets, but I've also supported trying to give more autonomy to the universities to raise fees and tuitions to try to offset some of the budget cuts. I think that's the one place where they're going to be able to go if we give them some of the power to offset some of those cuts.
HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on the air with Representative Franklin Foyle.
Good morning. Thank you. Mr. Foyle, do we actually know how much money we could generate if we eliminated the tax credits, say, for instance, the 30% for the film industry, if we have a total figure that we could put back into education and back into health care for the technical training that's needed for the world that we work in today? Thank you, sir.
Sure. Thank you for the question. I don't have the exact figures, but it's in the billions of dollars in tax exemptions that we have in law and give every year to different industries. And the different industries got them in the first place because there was an economic development reason in a lot of cases, and they have good reasons and good arguments to keep them. But it's something we have to look at. We had a commission that did do a review but didn't come back with any recommendations. So I think it's something ongoing that we need to continue to look at through the process.
877-217-5757. You may reach us via email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Shelby James writes, sales taxes in Louisiana, as in other states, are regressive. That means they extract a higher percentage of income from those at the low end of the income spectrum. The governor's proposal will make a tax structure that is already quite regressive even more regressive. That's a matter of fact, not opinion. Why do conservative Republicans despise poor people so much?
Well, I certainly don't despise poor people, but I appreciate the question. One of the concerns I have with the swap is the sales tax would be in most places over 10% in double digits, and it would be higher than any of our surrounding states. So that is a concern of mine. On the flip side, I think it makes sense to have some sales tax because everyone pays, not just poor people, but everyone who buys something will pay something.
Well, you're in a situation where I'm sure you're getting information from many people, but are there any surrogates for the governor? Is there anybody knocking down your door saying, Franklin, we really need this?
Not so much as far as persuading me one way or the other on how to vote on the legislation, but I will say the governor has had meetings personally with the governor himself, as well as Stephen Moray and Tim Barfield, where they've given us briefings and to explain why they think this is a good idea, what right. The parts are, and it's been sort of a work in process.
You have met with the governor individually?
Well, not just me in the room, but yes, I went over to the mansion with some other legislators, and he gave us a briefing along mm-hmm. with his staff about the plan. This was about a month ago.
Now, as I've stated earlier in the week and last week as well, there will be a poll released at some point today, and Bernie Pinsonet will be with us tomorrow. And Bernie has polled the state to find out how the people are accepting the governor's leadership. If those poll numbers are not good, will that affect the governor's ability to lead?
Well, I don't know that it'll affect his ability to lead in general, but clearly the governor is very powerful in getting legislation and getting legislators to support his plans. He's got the power of that office. And so that may affect his ability to persuade certain legislators to vote with his package.
297-5633, and this will take a two-thirds support for the House and the Senate to get it through the hoops. And then there are others, like Treasurer Kennedy, who say that constitutionally it should go before the people of Louisiana. Doesn't seem to be in the offing right now.
Right. Well, at this point, I don't know that. I mean, it's nice to see what, you know, if you could put it on the ballot and let the people decide. But you could make that argument about everything that we pass. And so if it's not constitutionally required, I don't know why we would just move it to the ballot. Otherwise, you'd be cluttering the ballot with everything.
All right, Steve on the North Shore. Steve, good morning. You're on with Franklin Foyle.
Good morning. I wanted to ask what the representative thought about the impact of the increased sales tax on merchants and businesses that sell things.
All right. What about bricks and mortar stores? How will they be affected?
Well, I think, and I was hitting on it earlier, if we do raise the sales tax to over 11%, we will have the highest sales tax in our region. And so there
may
be.
In the country.
Yeah. And certainly higher than the surrounding states. Mm-hmm. So that is a concern of mine. If we raise ours higher than the surrounding states, that we won't be as competitive. And so that's something we're going to have to look at very closely.
297-5633 is your number. J.C. Kane producing, and Franklin Foyle is our guest for a bit longer. State representative from Baton Rouge in his second term. He took office the same day that Governor Jindal took the oath of office 5 years ago, a little more than five now. January 14th, 2008 was the day. And since then, the governor has been reelected with 66% of the votes. Today we'll find out where his polling rating is from a survey conducted by Bernie Pinsonet of Southern Media and Opinion Research. We'll talk more with Franklin Foyle. We're also slated to hear from Denny McClain as we return on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Representative Franklin Foyle is the guest. And we go to Steve on Highland Road. Steve, good morning. You're on the air with Representative Foyle.
Good morning, Jim. Mr. Foyle, I want to go back to the LSU discussion. I think we went past that kind of quickly. This is what I heard you say. One is that you have been voting to spend one-time money, which I just want to comment. I think that sounds pretty irresponsible and not a real solution. That's just kicking the can down the road. And then two, it sounded like your other solution was to, you know, wring more money out of families, out of students who are at LSU, you know, trying to go to LSU. Do you have a solution that sounds more like government investing in its people?
Well, there are only three ways you can get more money to higher education. You can either raise taxes, which there doesn't seem to be any appetite for, and dedicate that money to higher ed. You can reallocate our resources and try to close some universities and consolidate our money into higher ed. Or you can give the universities more autonomy to charge people who use universities to make up some of that difference. But those are really your only options. Or you can keep things as the status quo, and I don't think anyone wants to do that. I think we've made major progress with LSU and the flagship agenda over the last few years by putting money into the university, and you can see that with their rankings in U.S. News and World Reports and so forth. So, look, I'm an LSU graduate, and I want to see the university do well, and it helps me to see that accomplished as an alumni.
Chu Jachadaram, you're on the air with Franklin Foyle. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Representative Foyle. It's Dr. Chu Jatarm. How are you this morning?
Fine, Dr. Chu. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to mention it's been a pleasure working with you on the autism legislation over the years. And my question is there going to be any other motion in that regard or any other children's legislation you'll be sponsoring this year?
Well, as far as autism legislation is concerned, we're still working through that from last year, but I do have a bill this year that it's not necessarily for children, but it's for people with disabilities, and it would give a tax credit to businesses that hire people with disabilities or disabled veterans. And interestingly enough, studies have shown that people with disabilities have less injuries on the job and better performance as far as not missing work. So I'm hoping to push that legislation through to encourage people to hire people with disabilities.
297-5633, there is still time to join Representative Franklin Foyle on WRKF today. James on Perkins. Hi, James, you're on the air.
Hi, two questions quickly. Why is revenue neutrality something to be striving for when the state's been short of revenue the last several years? And second, you said earlier that there's no appetite for increased taxes to support higher education. I'd like to see some evidence that there is no appetite. I think people would accept higher taxes if the Med government were fully funded. Thanks.
Well, as far as the second point is concerned, I think that people would like to see higher education funded more fully, but I can tell you when I have town hall meetings and talk to people in my district, people feel like they're paying enough taxes where they are now. So I have not seen an appetite to raise taxes. And as far as the second question is concerned, it was on – I lost my thoughts on that now.
Well, he was talking about revenue neutrality.
Right, on the revenue neutrality issue, that's the governor's – part of his plan. I said early on, if we do change some taxes, I don't know that it needs to be completely revenue neutral, because once again, it's not going to be revenue neutral on the individual. Some people will pay more and some people will pay less. I just don't think that we're looking to have a big swing in new taxes. That doesn't seem to be the appetite of the people, at least in my district, that I talk with.
Curtis on Essen. Hi, Curtis. You're on the air with Representative Franklin Foyle.
Good morning. Representative, you mentioned that you feel like everyone should have some skin in the game, should pay something as it relates to the sales tax, and that part of it I agree with. But what I have not heard anyone make mention is whether there's any attempt to bring proportionality of some sort if a sales tax is going to go through. And by way of example is if I buy a $40,000 new car because I can afford it, the person who buys a used car for less than $10,000, generally maybe that's what they can afford. So is there any thought that maybe a person like me who gets a $40,000 car might pay, let's say, 6 or 7 cents sales tax, and the person who gets the less than $10,000 would pay maybe 2 or 3 as opposed to the 4 or 5 or whatever the current numbers? Is there any attempt at bringing proportionality to this?
As far as the governor's plan, I haven't seen anything in that respect. I do know that he will continue the exemptions for food and medicine and things in that respect. But as far as items like automobiles, I don't know that there will be any distinction. And once again, I appreciate your term, everyone should have skin in the game. I think that's true to a certain extent. I'm not necessarily saying that I agree raising the sales tax to 11.5%. I need to see more data to make me comfortable with that. And right now, I'm still reviewing the information and getting input.
John in Lafayette. Hello, John. You're on the air with Franklin Foyle.
Yes, Representative, good morning. I'm calling from Lafayette, but I heard you say something about higher education. Of course, that's one of the things that I'm very interested in because I think it's a key to the future of our state, quality universities. And as you know, we've cut education, higher education, by almost $700 million in the last 6 years. And according to the governor's budget, he's going to cut it another $200 million. We've close to $1 billion now, and then if the fiscal hawks are successful, it's going to be even more than $1 billion. There has to be a better answer than the answers that you and the governor have been given about higher education.
Would you respond?
Well, I agree. We've cut higher education too much, and I would like to see more money directed to higher education. In fact, a couple of years ago, I proposed a bill to take all Riverboat Casino money here in Baton Rouge from our new casino and dedicate a portion of that to higher ed. I've been looking for answers to try to get more money into higher ed, and I'm going to continue to push that. That's a top priority of mine.
If the governor personally asked for your support, it's hard to turn down a governor, isn't it?
It is, but I've had to turn him down before. And
when have you turned him down before?
Well, as I told you, when we kept the cigarette tax, it was going to expire a couple of years ago, and I felt it was the right thing to do to keep the cigarette tax at 36 cents, and so he and I disagreed in that respect.
You didn't change your vote?
I did not. I felt that it was the right thing to do.
Some of your friends, like Representative Carter, did change their votes after the governor asked them to do so, and that's just the way politics works.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you want to try to work with the governor and the administration. Mm-hmm. It's very helpful to be on the same team, but ultimately it's what the people who elected me want me to do, and that's who I'm going to answer to.
What about the Medicaid situation? Are you in accord with the governor on not taking the Medicaid funding?
I'm wrestling with that as well, Jim. I didn't really like the whole Obamacare plan as it went through Congress, but now that's the law of the land. And when I look at the fact that we can get a lot of additional federal money for 3 years without having to pay anything on our side, that's a tough situation. I'm going to have to look at that very closely and hear more about it.
Bruce and Walden, please be brief. You're on with Franklin Foyle. Hi, Bruce.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Yeah, actually, you sort of took my question away. I was hoping that Representative Foyle was going to be an enthusiastic advocate for the Medicaid expansion. Every newspaper pretty much in the state is for it. PAR has come out for it. I mean, I don't know what he's wrestling with exactly.
Well, the only thing I'm wrestling with is I just need to get more information on why it doesn't make sense to take the Medicaid expansion. I'm still trying to – I want to hear from all sides before I make a final decision in that respect. But it's hard for me to right now turn away a lot of money we can get from Washington to help our healthcare situation.
Paul in Opelousas, please be brief. Hi, Paul.
How you doing, Jim? Jim, good.
Please be brief.
All right, question to you, yes, and I asked you before. How will the new sales tax affect present sales tax rate in parishes? Opelousas is 9.9. Will that be an increase to the 9.9, or will the parish just have to take that percentage less?
No, it would actually be an increase because the way the sales tax works, there's a part of its sales is state sales tax, and then part of it's parish sales tax. So the state portion would increase by about 2.5%. So that would be a total increase on your sales tax in St. Landry Parish if this plan were to pass.
297-5633, a bit more time with Franklin Foyle, state representative from Baton Rouge. People are engaged about this. There's no doubt that people are expressing their points of view. Have you gotten a lot of calls at your office?
I have, although more emails. People are communicating more and more by emails with their opinions and so forth. But it's a hot topic, and I'm hearing from a lot of people all across the district.
And are most of the calls and emails, are they favorable or unfavorable regarding the tax swap?
Right now, I'd have to say most people I'm hearing from are concerned about the tax swap and are not enthusiastic. And a lot of them are not for it at this point because they're concerned that the situation will affect them more adversely financially.
So how can the governor get the support he needs?
Well, he's going to have to go and make the case both to the people and to the legislature with hard data as to why it makes sense to get rid of the income tax and raise the sales tax. And like I said, I've seen a lot of details now on the legislation, but there's a second part of it. We have to then hear from economists, or at least I do, and accountants to analyze what's the effects of these changes.
Can he make that case persuasively?
He may be able to, but at this point, I think it's going to be an uphill climb for him.
Now, Joel Robideau yesterday indicated he thought he could, thought the governor could be successful. Now, is Representative Robideau just being a good soldier, or is he sincere in saying the governor has the capacity to turn this tide around?
Well, the governor, in my opinion, is the most powerful advocate for any legislation. And if anyone can get it done, he can. Representative Robideau, of course, is a sponsor of the bill and has been in more close contact with the governor over the details and so forth. But it's going to be a tough issue to get through. And I think part of the process is it's been relatively quick. We haven't known about this plan for just a few months, and it's a pretty major radical change, and people like the status quo.
Well, the session starts in 6 days. We'll follow it with you. Hopefully have you back soon, Representative Franklin Foyle. Captain Foyle, good to see you, and let's talk again.
Thank you, Jim.
My pleasure. 297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Those are your numbers, and we're joined now by the legendary Denny McClain, the man who won 31 games for the Detroit Tigers in 1968 when he was all of 24 years old. It was 50 years ago that Denny McClain made his major league debut, and he is with us today to talk about opening day and much more. Good morning, Denny McClain.
Jimmy, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Always good to talk with you. And 1963.
By the way, you're talking about one of my favorite governors, and I'm a Democrat, and I like your guy down in Louisiana.
You like Bobby Jindal.
I like Bobby Jindal. He is, I don't want to be too personal with him, but he just reminds me of the kind of guy that, while calculated in management ability, he's not afraid to pull the trigger from time to time going against the grain, so. That's the kind of guy I hope he's as good as I think he is, because I think one day he's got a shot at something very big.
Well, belated happy birthday to you, by the way.
Thank you.
And Denny, among other things in life, has been a talk show host, and you can hear he's well-versed on many topics, knowing about our governor. And in those who do not know, last time you were on this show, you were talking about how you were an endorser for an organ company for many years. You're a graduate of the Lyon Healing School of Music, class of 1962. There weren't many pitchers who were organists of renown, but you were one, and you actually went on tour. You played in...
Oh, no, I was on... I toured for Hammond for, 25 years. In the grand scheme of things, at one time in my life, I would have rather been a pianist, organist than anything else, and... But all of a sudden, somebody said, boy, you had a good fastball, and I decided that was going to be probably as much fun as anything to be in the big leagues, and as they say, the rest is history. But, not many people can do two or three of the things they've always wanted to do in their life, and certainly between the keyboards and playing baseball, I've certainly had two of my greatest wishes fulfilled in spades.
Now, when you came to the majors in 1963, you were 19. I recall reading your first book, Nobody's Perfect, and a guy named Jim Bunning took you under his wing, didn't he?
Yeah, a couple of guys did. Bunning was one of them. Rocky Colavito actually was the number one guy. Bunning was trying to show me a few things, but the guy that really stepped up the day I wound up in the big leagues the first night, it was like 32, 34 degrees. And they didn't give me a jacket when I got to the ballpark to sit there and watch the game. So it was a bit nippy, as they say. And the next thing I know, Rocky Colavito's coming down the walkway to the field, and he says, listen. And, you know, after some short conversation, he said, listen, I'll tell you what. He says, I'm going to try to go get another jacket. He said, but you can have my jacket. You're going to be around here a lot longer than I am. So Rocky took his jacket off and gave it to me. He says, any one thing you want to protect is that right arm, no matter what happens. So, you know, that's Rocky became a good friend all these years. I just saw Rocky within the last year, and he still looks great. I still think he could play probably. He's a marvelous gentleman.
Quite a hitter in his day. Now, when you started in 1963, that you didn't have pitch counts, did you? They weren't.
Mm-hmm. We did. We didn't have them in a restricted mode like they do today. Once they hit 100 pitches, my God, these guys disappear. Perfect example is yesterday. Verlander pitched yesterday for us opening day in Minnesota, and as soon as he got to 100 pitches, they took him out of the game. Well, he got the win for the game, but he almost lost it because in the seventh inning and I think the eighth inning additionally, they had men on second and third and one out or nobody out, and somehow, by the grace of God, they got out of both innings, so Verlander still maintained and retained the win for the game. They never tied it up or went ahead, Minnesota. So, I mean, that's the kind of risk you run when you leave a ball game. You still got nine outs to go. You're not controlling your own destiny at that point in time, and our bullpen is not like it once was, so he got a little lucky yesterday as well as the ball club, but on the other hand, we're in the weakest division in baseball. I mean, we got Minnesota, Cleveland, Kansas City, and Chicago. The four of them can't beat each other. They can't beat their own guys on the bench. It's the worst division baseball has had in many, many years. And it just, I don't know how they're going to fix it. Only money can fix it, and hopefully one of these clubs will start spending some money again.
We're going to take a short break, but we'll talk about comparisons with Denny McClain and Justin Verlander, who just turned 30 years old and signed a $180 million deal. That's $180 million. And Denny's career was over at the age of 30 because of wear and tear, and he did not make anything close to $180 million in his day. But in his day, at his age, he was certainly a more advanced pitcher than Verlander is right now. So how have things changed, and have they changed for the better? We'll talk with Denny McClain about baseball in 2013, and it's been 45 years now since the year of 1968, one of the most turbulent years in American history, when Denny McClain won 31 games and the Detroit Tigers were champions of the world. Back after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF. J.C. Kane is producing. 297-5633 is your number. Outside our area, 877-217-5757. Denny McClain won 31 games in 1968, won the Cy Young Award. Nobody's come close to winning 30 games since. Steve Carlton won 27 in 1972. But in the year after that, Denny McClain won 24 games and won yet another Cy Young Award. So 55 wins in two seasons, 1968 and 69, when he was 24 and 25 years old. And in the regular season of both of those years, he went well above 300 innings, 336 in 68, 325 in 1969. Today, you won't see a pitcher throw 300 innings in a season, Denny. Is it because they can't, or because the big money? What is going on as far as protecting pitchers today?
Well, it's all about money. I mean, when you give a guy like Verlander, in 2 years, he starts to collect on that $180 million. And by the way, baseball contracts are all 100% guaranteed. When you start putting that kind of money on the table, you have to protect your investment. It's just like a machine that you buy. You're going to have to get an oil change all the time and check the parts all the time and the hoses. You don't want it breaking down. The same thing with a pitcher. So they'll use that pitcher less. That's what they're going to do with Verlander. I mean, listen, he's going to be 31 years old this year. And the bottom line is to give somebody a $180 million contract starting in 2 years, I mean, it takes them to almost the age of 40. Here's the biggest example of the money. And listen, I much prefer that the owners or that the players get the money versus the owners. I mean, the owners have had it their way up until 1972. Their way, they kept all the money. They give no money to the players. We still have players who are alive from the 40s and 50s, early 60s, that in fact are broke. You know, they have, and baseball's got more money than you can imagine. I mean, we've got apparently $2 billion in our pension fund cash right now. We don't have that many people taking pensions every month either, by the way, just a few thousand. Anyway, make a long story short, what they're going to do here eventually is, guy's going to be that age. How do you protect yourself? Well, the only way you protect yourself is that he pitches less and less. And he's a competitor. He's got good stuff. And when he's got his good stuff, and most good pitchers have their stuff probably a half a dozen times a year. I mean, really good stuff. And when he's got that kind of stuff going in the ballgame, he can throw the ball down the middle like all great pitchers can. When you've got that thing going on that particular night, I don't care. You can tell them it's coming, and they're not going to hit you. And what he has never quite learned how to do yet is pitch. Because every time he gets into some trouble, he immediately goes to that fastball, which is okay. Don't misunderstand me. But, you know, sooner or later, that fastball starts to lose an inch, 6 inches, a foot and a half. And you got to be prepared for the inevitable. As long as he doesn't hurt himself, I think fundamentally he's going to be pretty good. But on the other hand, $180 million, he's one pitch away from no career. Every pitcher is. I mean, it happened to me just one day in Minnesota. The weather turned cold in the seventh or eighth inning, and all of a sudden to go out there for the eighth inning, didn't probably warm up enough with the changing of the temperature and what have you. And lo and behold, one pitch in the eighth inning changed my whole life. So that's going to happen. And, you know, very few pitchers leave the game without arm injuries. I mean, that's one thing that's inevitable. A pitcher is going to have a bad arm when he leaves that game because, first of all, it's anti the way you're supposed to be throwing a baseball.
297-5633, if you'd like to join the great Denny McClain and pose a question or two for Denny McClain, who is a two-time Cy Young Award winner, and both Cy Youngs occurred before his 26th birthday. I'm looking, you had 26 shutouts by the time you were 25 years old. Verlander, at the age of 30, has 20 complete games in his career.
That's a different game. You know, it's just a different game, and you were talking about pitch counts earlier. Our pitch counts, yes, we had pitch counts, but our pitch counts were different with every pitcher. In other words, if I was at 120, if I was at 110 or 115 pitches, they would say, "How do you feel? You okay?" And you'd go back out there. If it was the third or fourth or fifth starter on our ball club, and they get to 110, 115 pitches, they take them out of the ball game in most cases, because you earn a reputation for being able to handle the late innings because. The tough, as everybody who watches baseball today, listen, the toughest part of the baseball game to get through is the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings. People go into their offensive modes. They play little ball, small ball, big ball, whatever ball you want to play, they play in the seventh, eighth, and ninth. And that's what you have to be able to be ready for.
Well, and today we have these specialists, these relievers, they come in for one inning. In the old days, you'd have relievers pitch two, three, sometimes four, five innings.
Well, that's somewhat very accurate in the other sense that they wouldn't pitch till the next day normally unless you were who was the Yankee that just went? Gossage. Goose could pitch two innings on Monday night and come back and give you another inning on Tuesday or Wednesday. I mean, he was remarkable. You don't see that today. It's just not going to happen because people do not want to risk the money that's involved in those arms. I mean, if Rivera with the Yankees had pitched more than one inning 99.9% of the time, as many times as he went out there, you know, hell, his arm would have been gone 10 years ago. But they managed it very well. He took care of himself very well. And he's done all the right things. He's had quite a career. I mean,
oh,
that's
yeah.
one of the greatest careers I've ever seen for a relief pitcher. So it's extraordinary in the fact that, you know, it's 20 years he's been pitching relief.
And what a great postseason record he has.
Yep.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Denny McClain.
Hi, Dan.
Yes, I was wondering if you had ever had a chance to meet with Dizzy Dean, and is there anything comparable memorial-wise as to what they have Dizzy in the Mississippi Sports Hall of Fame in Jackson?
I am going to see the Dizzy Dean Museum this year. We're coming through there on a book tour sometime this summer, and I'm going to get an opportunity to see it. Dizzy, I met a couple of times in 68 because he was a broadcaster with NBC. He was broadcasting with Kurt Gowdy, Sandy Koufax, and Dizzy Dean.
Mm-hmm.
Dizzy was there the weekend I won my 30th game, and I can't tell you, a more delight, as everybody knows, his his English was classic Dizzy Dean. You know, he just slid into third base, folks, slid into third base. He hit that ball right against the wall. I mean, he was terrific. He was always funny. He was always on. And you know what? When you think back about it, he could have been really negative and nasty to me because his record had been there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And to have this 24-year-old brash kid with Detroit trying to upset that piece of history at that point in time, although I never looked at it like that, I mean, I guess you could take it the wrong way. But he never did. We were at a number of functions together, a number of dinners together later on. He was always a true gentleman. And I'll tell you the other guy I met, which you may or may not, you have a hard time believing, I met Lefty Grove. And I only wish, I pray to God that I had known that in 1969, when I was in Cooperstown for a exhibition game with the Tigers, that Lefty Grove was there. In fact, he and I were on the front page of the sporting news at the time. And I only wish I had realized the significance of Lefty Grove. Although, you know, on the other hand, probably the reason why you don't realize it, you're 24, you're on top of the world. You're the king. And I wish I had been able to spend more time because he was every bit as gracious as Dizzy was. And just a true, true, true gentleman. As a matter of fact, one of the most important pieces of memorabilia I have is an autograph from not only Dizzy, of course, but from Lefty Grove, because, boy, there aren't very many Lefty Grove autographs in this world with him and I on the same piece of him and I on the same picture.
1934 was when Dizzy won his 30 games with St. Louis, and then it
right.
took 34 years before Denny McClain became the next 30-game winner, and nobody's done it since. So since 1935, we're talking now 79 baseball seasons. Only one
yeah.
man has won 30 games in a season, and it's the man we're talking to, Denny McClain. Now, the year you won 30, the season started with the assassination of Martin Luther King. 2 months later, the assassination of Bobby Kennedy. The Vietnam War was going on. There were riots in the streets. It was an interesting time, wasn't it?
It was tumultuous. That's the kindest word I can use. Everybody was at each other. At that point in time, I think we had all realized finally that the Tet Offensive had started. We were losing tens of thousands. We were losing thousands of kids every week. And no one could figure out, especially when the soldiers were coming home and the soldiers were saying, we don't know what we're there for. They don't let us go attack anybody. We're defensive all the time. We take a mountain, then we give the mountain back. We take it again, we take it back. And people were dying to take a lousy mountain back and forth. And, of course, as we know, the Viet Cong, they fought in a different way like we had never seen before. And I went to two trips over to Vietnam the next 2 years. And I can tell you honestly, Jim, visiting the hospitals and some of the other places, including a fire base in almost North Vietnam, was just the most horrendous, horrific thing I've ever seen. These kids shot up, bang, bleeding, and everything else, and still fighting. I mean, it was, I mean, you talk about heroes, and of course, we've just gone through the same thing again since 9/11 with all of our heroes. And it's just a shame we don't do more for our heroes that are currently coming back now. Something's got to be done there, too.
And the year prior to that, in 67, you were pitching for the Tigers, and the season was interrupted by riots in the streets in Detroit.
Oh, we had a beauty. We had, I think it was 52 people got killed in 1967 during the riots for about 4 or 5 days. And all of it was, there was a speakeasy. Some people may not know the story, but make a long story short, there was a speakeasy that had been operating in Detroit for 45 years. And the cops went there, the mayor went there, the state reps went, everybody went there. It was an after-hours joint, for God's sakes. And all of a sudden, some police guy got some bug up his butt that they were going to shut it down one night. Well, we were playing a doubleheader the next day. We didn't have any idea what was going on. No one told us. So by the time we got to the park on Sunday morning, there was smoke billowing over the left field wall, which was about 8 or 10 blocks away from the ballpark. And I'll tell you how horrendous conduct can be. While that riot was going on and people were being shot and shot to death, our president of our club, a guy named Jim Campbell, who I loved dearly, I loved him, the police came to the ballpark and told Campbell, brought him up to speed exactly what it was. We had 52,000 people in the park that day for a doubleheader, and they told Campbell what was going on. He said, Mr. Campbell, we'd like to call the game as soon as your first game is official after the fifth inning, and let everybody get out of here because we just don't know where this thing is going. And Campbell told the police chief of Detroit, don't you dare stop this ball game. This is called money, income. Just put enough cops around the ballpark to keep everybody safe. How about that? I mean, we got a riot 10 blocks away, and he would much rather keep that doubleheader going than anything else.
Did you play the second game?
We sure did.
How has the city of Detroit evolved over the last 45 years?
You know, we've seen more progress in the last 3 or 4 years. We've had some mayor issues in this town, as we've always had, but the bottom line is that the city right now, we've got people stepping up with big money, and what they're doing is we've got one guy, Dan Gilbert, who's a big mortgage money guy here in Detroit, has bought in the last, I think, 90 days, 120 days, 17 buildings in downtown Detroit, 17. And he's renovating every one of them. And the 17 buildings are more or less all within, like, I don't know, 3/4 or about a mile apart. And he is trying to resonate and reinvigorate that marketplace so he can make it, you know what I call it a mini Chicago. You've been to Chicago, I'm sure, and how clean and super clean a certain part of the city is. And I'm born and raised in Chicago, the Loop. I mean, the Loop is totally protected 99.9% of the time. And I think that's what they're trying to create. I think they're trying to create a mini Loop where you can come down, bring your family, do your shopping, stay in a hotel, go to the casinos, and do whatever else you want in a very nice, beautiful, protected area. Now, I don't like to live that way, but if that's what it takes to start the ball to roll, we'll take his money. And, of course, the Illiches, who have got the guy that owns the Detroit Tigers, who has got every state and city and God-given tax break in the history of the world, he has been buying a lot of property lately, too. So at least they're stepping up and doing it. All we'd like to have back from Illich is the tax money he saved.
Yeah, and you got a former Detroit Piston as your mayor, the great Dave Bing.
Yeah, Dave has had a very rough ride here in Detroit. Terrific man, just a great guy. He jumped in way over his head, didn't realize it probably for the first hour that he was in office. And it's been a steady decline because the city now is in the hands of a state manager. A state manager runs the city. And we're confused up here because the people on the city council and the mayor, they've all been duly elected. I mean, you wonder how the state can step in, and there's no fraud going on at this point in time. There's always been, but nothing so obvious. They've stepped in to manage the city so they can pay their bills. Well, they've usurped every member of the city council, the mayor, and anybody else who's had an opinion about what needs to be done and who had the authority to do things, because they are absolutely powerless at this point in time. While this governor who we just got, who's a little on the eccentric side, decides that he's running the whole state. So whatever happens, he's going to have to eat it when the next election rolls around.
Well, we look forward to talking with you again soon. You got a book coming out?
We got one coming out. This is going to be a terrific book based upon the 1968 season. It's only going to be about the 31 wins. It's going to talk about the highs and the lows, the goats and the heroes and everything else. Because in 68, 42 times that season, we came back from being behind 42 times after the seventh inning. It was quite a season, and it's going to be interesting because the biggest thing about the book will be, I think we're going to have like 250 pictures in it.
Well, thank you, Denny, and we'll talk soon. I look forward to it. Take care, my friend.
All right. Thank you.
And we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.